So, yeah, it's the news, according to me. Oh, what was that all about? I have, It is Friday, Shabbat Shalom. It is 7:44 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. May 23rd, 2025. And my voice is not experiencing one of its prime days, I don't think. As prime as... I have a prime membership. It doesn't include my voice, apparently, this morning. This is going to be a real hassle. Sorry, this is going to be really annoying to listen to, probably. So maybe you just want to just not listen to it now. Other than to find out what's in my cup, I have the regular. I have the Big Train Pacific Chai with Almond Joy Creamer. And then I have, as my backup cup, of course, I still have some homemade sweet tea with peaches, which makes it homemade sweet peach tea with real peaches in it. And that is some good stuff right there. We have, it is, I would say, the finest that you will find anywhere on the planet. We have, I don't want to keep saying we, it's just me and my dog. I guess that's we. But, you know, the dog doesn't input too much other than just background noise. Ambiance, they call that. I have, I don't know what's going on with my voice this morning. I haven't done much speaking. I haven't had to yell at the dogs yet. So maybe that helps clear out all the phlegm, I guess, or whatever is in there. He's being very good right now. They've been very good this morning. They had a very busy day yesterday. Dropped them off at daycare. They keep them kind of, you know, they don't rest during the day like they do at home. And then when I got them home, I had them outside and I was mowing the yard. Of course, the little one, the young one. He's over 90 pounds. He's still a puppy, and he doesn't know what to think about the mower. So when I'm out on the mower, he runs back and forth from the garage out to the yard. And he barks and yells, and then he goes back inside, back out, back in, back out, back in, back out. Not too sure. He's not sure if he should be concerned about me being on the mower or not. So he's still in that stage of not knowing for sure what's going on. Meanwhile, the old dog is just laying there in the driveway, chewing on a bully stick, and doesn't know anything else is going on around him because he's just an old dog who only gets up, you know, only gets worried when it matters, and sometimes not. He's just kind of he's an old dog. Anyway, he has old dog issues. Yeah. So that's my backup cup. That sounds like the voice is starting to come back now that I'm starting to talk a little bit. Not sounding so bad. A few things to talk about today. I don't know. There's something I wanted to talk about for a while. It has to do more with the surveillance state. I had this conversation with a family member this last week, and she said she really feels like we're really close to the rapture happening, you know, the return, the end times stuff. That's the apocalyptic type stuff that is detailed in Revelation and Daniel and other places. And I have to agree, I mean, I've felt this way for, you know, years, at least the last 20 or 30 years. It's fairly obvious to me that probably the final day, the last days players are at least have been born by now. Now it's questionable. Some people say, well, the Antichrist has been born. He's already been born, or he or she's been already been born. Very possibly, it's very possible that is the case. If that entity or that person is actually going to be born. The more we worship technology, the more technology plays. Now, I think the technology part of things is going to be the beast. I don't know. I don't want to wrap my hands around anything too tightly when it comes to regard with how things are unfolding in the end times and how, you know, well, the end times are the beast is going to be a computer. What are the Antichrist is going to be a whatever. And that person is going to be who's somebody, whatever. I'm not going to be dogmatic about any of those things, personally. We'll just have to see how it unfolds. Of course, then you have the pre-trib, the mid-trib, and the post-trib rapture, folks. And again, it doesn't matter. You know, if you're post-trib and it happens to be a pre-trib rapture, well, guess what? You're still going to go. So whatever you think about that, that's great. That's wonderful. But what's going to happen when it happens? I'll tell you when it's going to happen. I know exactly when it's going to happen. It's going to happen when it happens. And you'll know. Then everybody will know when it's happening. I certainly believe we're going to be going through the birth pangs. If you read what the Messiah said very clearly, when you see these things, these are the birth pangs. So, yeah, we'll just have to, the point is, we live a life of devotion, committed life of devotion each day, longing and looking for His appearing. And there you go. When it happens, it happens. It's not in our hands to determine when it's going to happen, or it doesn't matter whether we say it's going to happen or not. When it's going to happen. It's great to try to figure it out. It's a great puzzle to kind of find out. And don't get me wrong, it's not wrong to try to figure it out and try to look into the things and try to understand. Because I think it will be helpful to those who are unbelieving, or even those who are believers. Anything that can build your faith is great. It's awesome. I happen to attend a thing. It's a little home church. We call it a Torah study. It's we don't just do Torah. We get into a lot more of the Jewish, or should say Hebrew, the Hebrew roots movement. Is kind of out there. It's not, but we don't follow. I wouldn't say we are there either. The Hebraic roots movement typically is a, look, there's a very slippery slope people go down when they start getting into Jewish traditional law, Jewish traditional stuff, the feasts, all that kind of stuff. And this is the way I have seen it happen. This is what typically will happen. You get these groups that are trying to align more fully with more of a messianic Jewish kind of lifestyle. What ends up happening, and this is kind of the interesting part of this, and I've seen this happen so many times. These groups, they start in with dietary law. Well, we're just going to follow the dietary law. So I should eat this and not eat that. These are the things, obviously, that God, ordained for us to eat and not to eat, and all this, fish's fins, or fins, whatever. Fins, hooves, and whatever. Can eat these things, whatever. And so these things are clean, these things are unclean. And, of course, the New Testament is ripe with things where the apostles had these back and forths with all this stuff about what is clean, what is unclean. So that continues on today. What we have, I think, is a lack of understanding with regard to grace, mercy, what was done on the cross. Whole purpose of all the law, everything that was there, everything that was in Torah. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. The Torah became flesh and dwelt among us. The law became flesh and dwelt among us and was crucified for us. Crucified, buried, and resurrected. So this is the difficult part of us living all this out. Now, I have seen groups like this go ever so slowly, ever so carefully into following the law. And they start to depend on the law, and they start putting that ahead of things and saying, well, the law says this, and the law says that, and it starts with dietary law. And then, of course, the feasts and you have to do the feasts. You have to do them just like this. This is the way we have to do them. Do them properly. And then you go into different things where, you know, can't eat this, can't eat that, can't do this, can't do that, have to do, you know, can't travel on this day. This is the, you know, you start to, all of a sudden, you start to live under the law. Because for some reason, that brings us closer to God. That pleases him more, that somehow something you're doing now gives you more favor with God. That's the mindset. They may not say that, but that's the mindset. I'm better than you because we follow this, whatever it is. This is a very dangerous, slippery slope that people go down. And quite frankly, I think anything you do to try to add to or try to win favor with God takes away from, in fact, it spits on what was done on the cross. What you're saying is, okay, I'm looking here at the cross and I'm seeing Christ crucified and I'm seeing everything that he did on the cross. But I can add to that. I can do something that makes that better. I can do something that my approval is all wrapped up in that, but yet I can add some more things to my approval. How offensive is that? If your only child were sacrificed for you to live, and you went off and said, you know what, I can do a little bit more than that. That wasn't quite enough. I can do some more things to make you love me. More. How offensive do you think that would be? So it is a tough struggle. In fact, I think it is the fight of faith. It's the fight of faith in what he did on the cross that we do more than anything else, not just contending for the faith or not just arguing our points about being right. It's more about accepting and receiving what he's done, and I think that's where there's a bigger battle going on, I think, spiritually for most of us than we realize. There you go. That's my sermon for the day. But by the way, this is normally a political show, but I want you to know where I stand with all those things. And it's one of those things that it's the group that I go to, the group where we attend. That's where I'll be tonight. We have a Friday evening supper time, like a Shabbat meal, and then we also have some teaching, and then we do some worship time, and then we, you know, prayer, whatever that, you know, it's just kind of a home. It's a kind of a family group, and then we. There's probably four or five families there, whatever, I don't know. Mostly older folks. And we all, we do that kind of thing. That's our meeting. Anyway, there you go. What else was I going to talk about? There's several things going on, especially with the college campuses, and Kristi Noem came out with a bombshell announcement yesterday. I think it was yesterday, or might have been the day before. I think it was Harvard. So it was one of the Ivy League schools, and this is going to follow suit. This is going to be more than just one university. All the universities are going to fall into this. But they're all ignoring Trump's mandate, basically, is that, you know, if you have, if you're encouraging or allowing even the kind of rhetoric on campus that is anti-Semitic, it is racist, whatever it is, and you're having these protests, well, guess what? Your federal funding is going to be cut off. Because these school institutions were not designed to be places. Look, it's still private property. It's not public land. You know, unless it's owned by the federal government, they can regulate the kind of activities they have on campus. You can't just, you know, free speech is free speech unless, you know, here at my house, if I want to say, no, you can't say those things at my house, I have the right, believe it or not, to kick you off my property if I don't want you to say certain things. That's just the way it is. Your right to free speech ends at private property. Now, you can say whatever you want, but there's consequences to that, and that consequence is you will not be allowed to be on my property. That's say whatever you want. I can't arrest you for it. It's not illegal, but I can certainly kick you off. There can be rules. This is why we fall in when the public school system, when you wear a particular kind of t-shirt to school, the school can come in and say, it's a lewd t-shirt. We don't want to have any kind of political speech on your t-shirt or on your shirt, whatever it is. That's part of our dress code. We don't allow that. You have to have that changed or you know, whatever you're going to do, cover it up, whatever you're going to do. That's perfectly legal, by the way, even in the public school system. That's just a rule. Now, they can scream free, you know, freedom of expression, freedom of speech, whatever it was going to call. But it's a very fine line here. There's some gray areas, but it's very difficult now, if you want to go out in the public square, you want to do whatever you want to say, there's places for public for free speech, and there's places where free speech does not apply. And I still hear people yelling, "Oh, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater." Well, yes, you can. It's not illegal. There's no law on the books anywhere that says you can't do that. You haven't broken. Tell me the law and the statute, because there isn't one. It's the liability of doing so that I think is the biggest issue in this particular matter. But again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a financial counselor. So just take what I say as, there's probably some lawyer out there going, well, the Stutzman and Plackbrick and the Fruchenfrocken case back in the Fruchenfrocken Bleakin days, whatever. There's a precedent set, whatever. I don't know. You know, all I'm telling you is, I don't know. So I'm telling you. That much I do know. What I do know is that I don't know. There you go. That's good chai. So we have, I know that much. Oh, okay. So the show's half over and I haven't said anything yet. There's some things going on. Of course, they're going after Trump now about the whole South Africa thing. That's blowing up in their face. Because they're realizing that there's all kinds of weird things that have gone on over there. And now they just haven't reported them because now they're just upset because they didn't report them. And you know, how dare they say that those things happened when we didn't report it? Now, having said that, a couple of news stories that are breaking here. I guess there was a couple of, there's a D.C. in D.C., District of Columbia, the Washington, D.C. area. I don't know how many of my listeners have ever been there. It's quite a place. There's all kinds of museums and things to look at, see stuff to see, do. One of the things that are there, and I would recommend everybody go to it, is the it's the Jewish Museum. I think it's called the Holocaust Museum, but there's a couple of museums there. But I've been to that whole thing, and there's a thing that goes through the basement that's different than the one upstairs. But there was a shooting there, I believe yesterday or last night, and the two people were killed. My understanding, the understanding I had was that the two people who were killed were actually envoys of, they were actually official Jewish envoys, I believe. And of course, the guy who was, he's already been detained, been arrested, is in custody. He was screaming free, free, free Palestine, whatever, the whole thing. And of course, these people that take it upon themselves to become the vigilantes, to become the heroes, because they're so worked up by political rhetoric that all of a sudden they feel like they're the justice warriors. They're justifying the killing of someone because they say that Israel is killing people without just cause. So that gives them the right, apparently, to just kill someone. Because now they're justified in killing that person. They had nothing to do with the death. It's just on and on with this kind of stuff. But people become so frenzied, so worked up. And I've got friends who are on Facebook who, every time they check into Facebook, it is something to do with DTS, their Trump, TDS, their Trump derangement syndrome flares up as soon as they click on the Facebook, the first thing they see on their feed about whatever it is, whatever story it is that they want to, they just copy and paste it, share it on their timeline. It's all they do. Nothing that's important in their life at all, other than just the rhetoric that the left is dishing out that they just continue to track down the whole way. Yeah, so that's what's been going on with that. The couple of things that the apparently I've been a couple of plane crashes. The weirdest one was this. I think it looks like a Cessna 3. I don't know what it is. It's 320. It could be a 320. It's either a 320 or it's possibly a 400 series. It could be a 401, 421. It's a piston twin engine Cessna. Apparently couldn't get the gear down. They landed at the field that they were based at. I guess I think they had taken off from that field they're coming back to that field, I guess. And the gear wouldn't come down. They tried everything and they went through the checklist, couldn't get it to do anything. Sometimes if you do a 3G turn, which is very close to some airplane's limitations, and of course you can't, there's no G meter in a lot of these airplanes. I mean, G meters, typically you'll see a G meter in an aerobatic airplane. Most aircraft do not have a G meter in them. Now, some phone apps have G meters. You can actually, that are pretty accurate. They're a little bit behind typically, but you can get pretty close. You get into a turn, you just keep increasing the bank angle, depending on what speed you're going, and it will increase the G load, and that supposedly will. Of course, you feel like you're three times heavier than you. You are most of them around 2.8, I think, utility, but that's, I don't know. I'm not sure what the Cessna's series of Cessna has. So they're really close to their max limit. So that supposedly will pull the gear out. If there's something there that's hanging it up, it'll just drop, it'll automatically drop the gear. Now there's uplock pins and stuff like that go into place. And if those aren't moving, it's not going to come out. Well, they couldn't get the gear out, so they landed on supposedly a foamed runway. Now, I didn't know that they still foamed runways. I thought that they stopped doing that, but apparently they'll still do it. It's the foaming is only to keep the airplane from catching on fire if they've got a lot of fuel on board. Supposedly, it kind of acts as a fuel retardant, flame retardant, spark retardant kind of thing. However, it also adds to the slipperiness of the airplane, and it will slide down the runway further, which is a problem. If the runway is very long, that's not a big deal. But if it's a short runway, you're going to slide that thing around to the end, which can cause more problems. So they apparently that happened, and everybody was okay. Now, the trick there is to, as you're coming into land, just as you start to touch down, get the airplane in the ground effect, and you shut the engines off. That way you don't, the engines aren't striking, the propellers aren't striking the ground. You have more of a chance of saving the engines, possibly even the propellers. Then there's the other crash that happened. Apparently, this is a weird one, folks. A Cessna Citation 550 apparently crashed. I believe it was really early yesterday morning. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning yesterday. My understanding is they were coming back from somewhere, and they were trying to get in. I think this was out in California. And they were, or maybe it's down in Florida. Wherever it was, they were trying to get in, and they couldn't. It has had some very low weather in several places. Now, I don't know if the pilot was single pilot or not. It's still questionable. The report I heard last night was a little bit lacking on actual data. Not a lot of Cessnas flying around out there that are single pilot, that are owned by single pilot certified individuals. It's there's a small business jet. Called a Citation, and there's different models of it. It goes over. There's the CJ. There's the older ones. There's the Citation 2, the Citation 1, the Citation 5, the 7, 3. All these different, and there's the 10. Of course, the 10 is the at one point was the fastest business jet built. However, I think there's some others now that are faster, have longer range, but the no, they're not all Learjets. Everybody sees a business jet. Oh, it's a Learjet. It's not a Learjet. Lear is a company. I think it's now owned by Bombardier, I believe. It's out of Canada. Which also makes the Canadair jet. So there's different ones of those. So that's what's happening with all this stuff. Anyway, this plane, it's a 550. It was trying to make an approach. Very low weather conditions. 200 overcast and half mile visibility is usually the minimums you can use for most approaches that have an ILS, an instrument landing system. Typically, they have that is the minimums you can have. So 200 foot overcast, but the visibility is what kind of limits your ability to do the approach. So if the approach is half mile visibility or 4,000 RVR, whatever runway visible range, whatever they call it, at the particular airport, whatever kind of measuring instruments that they have. So if it's 2,400 over or 2,400 RVR, whatever it is, they'll have an RVR rating. But a lot of times they just call it half mile. And if it's tower visibility, it's different than actual instrumentation visibility. All kinds of things like that. So my understanding was it was a half mile visibility and 200 sky obscured. So in other words, they couldn't, they believed it was 200 foot overcast, but you can't really define, it's undefined or it's not really defined overcast. They were attempting to make a landing on a particular runway, and I haven't heard exactly what all the details are. Apparently crashed. They hit some power lines, crashed. Don't know anything about the avionics on the airplane. Now, this is a Part 91 operation. What that means is they were private operations. They weren't a commercial operator. No, they weren't air taxi. They weren't air cargo, any kind of scheduled flight. This was just a private jet. Private jets can do, even if it's 00 at the airport, they can still do the approach. Now, if you land, and the minimums, now if you determine that the minute you get down, you see a runway and you can land, it's fine. If the, even if the know, the instrumentation is saying that this visibility is less than that. If you can determine that you can see the airport and land, that's fine. But you best not go below the minimums. You still can't go below the minimums. Some private operators will do that. They'll shoot the approach because they can legally do it. If you're a 121, which is an commercial air carrier, or like an airline, or a air charter service, air taxi, you're not even allowed to. Once you are outside, if you're outside the marker and the visibility goes down, you can't shoot the approach. You have to call it off. Now, if you're inside the final approach fix, which is about 5 miles, usually 5 miles from the airport, from the runway, you can continue the approach if the weather goes down. But the so there's all these rules that you have to know as you're doing the approach to the airport. But the private operators aren't bound by that at all, and a lot of them will do an approach, do what they call the look-see approach, which means they go down and take a look-see, and many times they will go below minimums. It's not a prudent thing to do, and it's illegal, and people do it. It's very stupid. Now, I don't know. I'm not saying that's what they did here. I don't know if they had other issues. I don't know if they, because apparently they didn't crash that close to the airport. the ILS system will take you right down to the runway. It will literally, you know, you can just keep on flying it right down. You'll end up pounding right in the center of the runway as long as all your needles are straight, typically, normally. Some ILS systems are not coincident. It will say right on the chart, not coincident with the runway. In other words, it doesn't line up specifically with the runway. But it will pretty much get you right to the point where you will touch down, at least on the property. These guys crashed. The tail number on the airplane was 666. One of the guys on the airplane was the drummer for, was there a band called The Devil Wears Prada? Or was it just a song that they did? I don't remember which. There were 6 people on the airplane. All of them died. And there were 6 people on the ground that were injured, one of them serious. Coincidence just starts to line up. I don't know what this was all about. I think there was something more going on spiritually here with this whole situation. I don't know what all was going on there, but I'll be keeping an eye on that one just because it's kind of an interesting unfolding, all that what's going on there. Probably found out more about it in the next couple of days. The NTSB will come out with an initial report, and then about a year from now, they'll come out with a final report, which is just after the entire investigation has been done. And it's been very clear that they go through everything very thoroughly. Speaking of airplanes, this is a huge deal. It's been brought up by a lot of people. The Pentagon now has accepted the gift from Qatar, whoever it isn't there. The gift of the 747, a $400 million airplane, to be used as Air Force One. There are people who are, I don't want my president flying around on an airplane that's been gifted by somebody else. I guarantee you, this airplane's going to go through a thorough heavy check. This is not going to be... You have to understand, about half of the wear and tear on an airplane is the annual inspections they have to go through, or the 100-hour inspections, or whatever it is they go through. When maintenance guys start tearing things apart, and for some reason, the way airplanes are designed, the way they're manufactured, they don't seem to have in mind inspections. I mean, to some extent, they do, but I think that they forget that some things might have to be inspected or replaced at some point, and they make it very difficult. Automakers are notorious for this nowadays. Yeah, you got to take the engine out to change the spark plug. Oh, great. That's great. That was some good thinking there. Same thing with the airplanes. They can take apart almost every nut and bolt in that aircraft. Put it through all kinds of potential, hazardous risk issues. And there's people that are actually concerned about this. Oh, I don't want them on an airplane. I don't think he should be flying around in an airplane that was gifted to him by somebody else. It's kind of like the whole pager thing. Those pagers weren't gifted, by the way. They were sold to people that were, I think it was Hamas or somebody, Hezbollah, whoever it was, had all these pagers that all of a sudden started exploding. That's okay. You don't go through a pager and check it all out when you buy the pager. The fact that there still are pagers being manufactured kind of blows me away. But they ended up, this airplane is not just going to be, Trump's going to go over and pick it up. The first flight it's going to do is going to be with him on it, flying it back to the state. That's not the way it's going to work. Now, whether or not it gives opportunity for something to happen is a whole other story. And yeah, I think that there are probably deep state individuals. Get James Comey out there, with his shells, his little shell game he's playing. And again, I think that they should take I think he should take them to the beach where he found that formation, as he calls it. Interesting shell formation at the beach. I think it might have something political to do with something. See how he's very careful about how he crafts his little words. I think he needs to take the Secret Service back to where he found those, and he needs to pick up a few of them and take some fingerprints off of them. And let's see if James Comey's fingerprints show up on any of them. And if his are the only ones on them. It's probably not by now, but. I just really, I would not trust that guy with my car keys. So we have that's the issue with the plane. Now there's a bigger issue, and that is the gifting aspect of this whole thing. Well, when somebody gives you a gift, you kind of expect something in return. Now this of course, very richly, Hillary Clinton is the first one that speaks up. When somebody gives you a gift, they expect something in return. Coming from the person who received about $2 billion in gifts into their foundation. Before the presidential election in 2016. Gee, oh, really? I guess you're the authority on this then. We should probably listen to you because you should know. Again, projection from the left. Because that's what they would do. There's been an interesting exchange in some things. It's been the way the media is treating things. Of course, they just continue to. They go on with their rhetoric, and they wonder why they're losing credibility, and they continue to think that they're just going to catch this guy in something, they're going to get their credibility back. That's not the way it's going to work. You can't keep doing this because it's just going to bounce off the guy because he's really not out there doing. They expect him to do something nefarious, and they continue to say he's nefarious. And of course, people who don't know any better, people who aren't in the mix, they're all out there on Facebook. I apologize. I'm apologizing to the world for on behalf of the president because he's doing this and that and whatever. I'm embarrassed. I apologize to the world. I want to speak to the world and apologize. Who are you really talking to at this point? I mean, when you're talking to the world on your Facebook page. You'll see, what is that? Like you have 300 followers, 1,000, what is it? And you're speaking to the world. What kind of altruistic opinion of yourself is, do you realize there are 8 billion people on the planet? Okay, what is your influence? Much like this show, I realize I'm just kind of out there talking to the people in a circle that are probably, now maybe there might be some people in the circle who are very influential and who listen to this, and it might inspire someone to say something to someone else. And the little ripple effect that we might have in someone's life, you never know. But this idea that you're coming out. I'm going to formally say today that I'm apologizing on behalf of the entire country, but that we are embarrassed by... Just speak for yourself. Say, you know what, I find it kind of embarrassing, personally. Whatever. Well, if you want to say that, that's fine. Okay, that's how you feel. This idea that you're somehow stepping in to speak for all kinds of people who aren't speaking, and most of your motivation to speak is based on things that other people have influenced you to say. Have you taken the time to step back, think about what it is you're going to say? Because there needs to be some self-reflection and self-awareness in some of this stuff. And that is the one thing the left lacks more than probably anything is introspection. There is a, self-awareness takes a very, it's a very deliberate act. It takes quite a bit of self-discipline. And it is a very difficult road to go down. Let's just say it's not an easy, smooth path. If you're honestly, objectively looking at your life, and becoming aware of who you are and the way you are. And it can become very, it can be very discouraged by yourself sometimes. I mean, it's just, I'll just say this. I'm just going to go this far with it. I'm not going to go any further. I'm going to go on to another topic. Reading a little meme the other day about how, you should never give up on God. God isn't giving up on you. You shouldn't give up on God. And I read that. I was like, yeah, okay. I have no problem with thinking that God's not going to give up on me or that I'm certainly not going to give up on God. That just seems insane. That's insanity to me. What? Now, it's very easy for me to give up on myself. That part is really easy. Tell me if somebody can encourage a person beyond that point. Because that's the tough one right there to overcome. Like I said, that's all we're saying about that. That's all the further we're going with that. So we could go down that bunny trail, rabbit hole, whatever you want to call it. All the rabbits start coming out again. So we're not going to do that. What else is in the news? I had so many things I was going to talk about. There's some things I was actually going to play today. I just some audio, but it's just not. I had some things lined up. I think next week, hopefully, is going to be a little bit more of a normal. Hopefully, going to be a little bit more of a normal week. With regard to the show, my ability to be able to do some things regarding live broadcast, hopefully with the, I don't know, I keep saying it. This whole week I kept threatening that it's going there, but I have some time over the weekend. I think I'm going to start putting some things together for that very reason. I can start doing some live broadcast with video, and it's going to be a video broadcast, like on Rumble, Facebook page, live. The news according to me. However, and I keep forgetting to mention this. I want to talk about this at the top of the show, and I keep forgetting to do it. Dial into the show. You can call in or you can leave a message. You can't actually call the show. You can call in, leave a message, or you can text the show at the number 812-379-8778. So it's, again, 812-379-8778. You can call in. I have had a couple of messages. I think people are using that number for other things because I got this one message from a juvenile detention center. I think that was a wrong number. And I don't think it was a joke. I was when I first started reading, I was like, oh, I know who this is. Because I know I have particular friends who I know would play that kind of a joke on me. And they would, oh, by the way, this is so-and-so from the juvenile detention center. You're supposed to show up. But it was real. It was a real deal. It was, I actually had return case numbers, return file number. It was a whole text thing with all the stuff on it. I was like, I typed back wrong number. So, but there's some others, and there's comments that you allow me to say that, because I keep forgetting to tell everybody. I was saying a couple weeks ago, and yes, make sure that you, if you call in or text in, it's 812-379-8778. Text the show or emails. It should be in the description of the show in the, I'm not sure exactly how Apple Podcast does it. I post to a thing called Podbean, and I also post to a thing called Castos. Those two formats, those two platforms, I fill in all kinds of information, put all kinds of stuff in there, and that is supposed to be passed along to things like all the different places that carry it, Spotify, everything else that's out there, Apple stuff. And I don't know for sure how much of that information gets put onto the broadcast, onto the podcast info. The number should be in there somewhere. So if you look for it, you can just click on that number, or you can click on it just in text, or you can click on a call. Either way. And in one particular system, I'm able to put in the link to the google.com/voice. If you don't have a phone or an international plan and you're out of the country, you can actually go to google.com/voice. And in there, you can type in that number, 812-379-8778. You can type that number in, and you can actually leave a voice message or a text message as well. So there you go. That's all I got to say about that. I'm going to move onward and upward here as we move into the weekend. Again, as I've said, Shabbat Shalom. Have a great weekend. Have a great Shabbat tomorrow. Starts tonight, I guess. And I will see you on Monday, and we should have a show every day next week, as far as I know. I think there might be one day where it'll be a little bit tight, but I think every day next week I should be able to have a show pretty much, I think. 812-379-8779. I want to thank you again for listening, for passing the show along, for commenting, for calling, whatever you do. Or just for listening, just appreciate it. There's no obligation. Doesn't cost you a dime, other than your time. And that's in my cup of chai. So there you go, folks. God bless. Have a great weekend. Take care. See ya.